Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous 50 birthday party. Yes. And my name is Evelyn, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Will everyone who cares to please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The title of this long-timers panel is We Need a Power Greater Than Ourselves. All of the panel topics this weekend are taken from For Today, the Daily Reader, first published by Overeaters Anonymous in 1982. This panel's topic comes from the December 12th reading. Our chief want in life is somebody who shall make us do what we can, by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Only one person can make me do what I am capable of doing, myself, but I need as much support as I can get from my friends, sponsors, and every single one of the OA members who go to meetings week after week. It is important to be clear in my mind that other people have only their love and support to give me, to give, to inspire me to work the program and to achieve abstinence. They cannot do these things on my behalf. The strongest and most dependable support I have is my higher power, which is there for me at all times and whose will for me is to do the best I can. For today, I am putting my God-given abilities to more and better use in this program, thanks to the presence of God in my life and of my fellow OAs who are following the same path. We have four speakers on this panel who have been abstinent and in recovery for over 100 years. As they are sharing, we will pass baskets around the room. They're here in the front room, and so we're going to start circulating them, please. Please be sure to keep it moving, even if you have already passed it. As speakers continue to share, members may think of questions that they did not have when the basket was first passed. Our first speaker is Dave, who will speak for 10 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Dave. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Dave.
That's why I'm here. And to be at this glorious 50th birthday party, I think my first one was the 18th or something. I remember because the 8th, there was numbers on the curtain in Glendale. And where's that park at? Off of the 5? What, did you go up the 5 and there's a park there?
No, it's Glendale.
No, it's not. Whatever. Yeah. There's a park. That's good. There was a 1 and an 8 on the curtain, and the 8 fell down during the thing, and I thought there's kind of a spiritual significance. But a man, I know that my experience, strength, and hope, let's do that. I came here, I was born in May the 22nd, 1944, and my name was Robert Lee Henderson. My name's David Edwin Burge now because the people that... the lady that gave birth to me, I was the second child born out of wedlock, and she gave me up for adoption, you know. And that's where the problem started. And the people that adopted me fought just about every day until they divorced when I was 15 years old. And my mother told me that she, and I'm very clear that my mother, it's a true statement she made. She picked me out because I was special. I was cross-eyed. They took me and they spent a lot of money getting my eyes straightened out, which a lot of people will argue about that today, but it's another conversation. And when I would cry and ask that the lights be left on at night, she would turn the light. I'd have to have a light on in my room because I was afraid, and that's the root of my problem is fear, of course. And when I was afraid or came home because some kid beat me up or something, she would sit me down in front of the table and give me graham crackers and milk, And then when I ate the whole box of graham crackers, she'd say, well, that's gluttony. So I got a little mixed message there, It was gluttony, but... I grew up that way, and my food always comforted me. I'm not unique or unusual from most people that... get up in Overeaters Anonymous. And I got here after taking the pills and the shots. I tried to get the stomach bypass surgery, but at that time, I wasn't, you had to be really sick to get it. You know, you had to have high blood pressure or at risk or something. And I wasn't, you know, so they wouldn't give it to me. So, and I was very angry at Kaiser Permanente. There's another resentment I had because they wouldn't give me the stomach bypass surgery. Thank God we welcome people into the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous that have had stomach bypass surgery. Some of our best people are here because of that. Let me say that, but I'm just telling you my story. And so I got here, and I was abstinent for 10 years. I went in, I did what my first sponsor, Helen, and here's my motives, you know. Somebody said the other day, how'd you pick your first sponsor, Dave? I said, I found the woman with the largest breasts in the meeting. I'm not unlike most men that come to Overeaters Anonymous. I know I listen to them all the time. I sponsor them, you know. And I come to a convention for a completely different thing than I did when I first came here, you know. My motive when I leave here is to go home and see my bulldog. So I've come a long way, you know, in my mind. So, but Helen had three boys, and I call her up and give her my food at night, and she would say, just a minute, Dave. Just Stephen, get off of there. You know, and I can't remember the other two boys' names because probably Stephen was more like me. He got in trouble all the time. But so I followed the food plan, and I lost all my weight, and I went to the meeting, and there were a couple people there that had big books and 12 and 12, and I stayed away from them, you know. And I didn't see any reason for me to read the Alcoholics Anonymous book because I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, I was an overeater. And then I learned that you could scratch the names out in the book, so I did that. Good Lord, who'd want to be associated with Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And that's the way I felt. And so fast forwarding, so I'm not unlike most other people. After 10 years, I went out on my own, you know. If somebody said at a meeting, and I hate that when they say that, you know, there's life outside the program, and I must have perked up, you know, and so... So I got a better job and a new wife and a new home and everything, and everything the program everything that ever happened to be good happened in this program. And so I didn't completely abandon the program, but I certainly did stay home. And my wife said, "Well, you love YOU and you love OA and then you love me," you know. And so I ended up in another program with an A in it. So and it got me. Got me back to shorten that up, and it got me back to Overeaters Anonymous, you know. But this time in OA, I realized I went to a retreat, and I think I weighed 285 pounds or somewhere up in there. I didn't. You know, who wants to weigh themselves, you know? When you know you're, and I was back. I felt I'd failed, like so many people I listened to. Thank you very much. And this time I got a new conviction, you know. And it took me a long time to get back on my feet. For me, it took, you know, to my assumption, somebody else would say it took what it took, you know, which is probably true. But I knew, when I prayed, I knew I needed a couple of things. I needed to go to a step study, and I needed to hang out more with men. So I helped start a men's meeting, which is still going, I'm proud to say, in San Diego. And I started a step study, which I'm proud to say is still going, and I think there were 30 people in it the other day. And I profess to be the founder, and we all laugh about that, you know. I'm not the leader anymore, you know. And I turned over that. But today I'm doing the same thing I did. I laugh about this that I did with Helen, you know. I write my food down. I went back to the doctor, and the doctor, the only new unique thing was the doctor this time said, I said, "Well, what should I do? I know you're going to give me a food plan again, and I know all about." She said, "I know you do." She said, "Dave," she says, "but here's a new one. Don't eat anything with a barcode on it." Rather unique, you know. It's true too. Yeah. So it's fruit and vegetables for this guy. So the topic is wonderful because there's only one person that can do this for me, and that's me, you know, and. I have to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God every day, which I do. And it says, you know, I have to affirm, I have a power greater than myself, and I call it God. You know, God is always with me, like it says here. For somebody that's been as lonely and felt a part of everybody as I have. I need a God, an indwelling, always present God, which I have. And that's been the salvation. And the great legacy of Overeaters Anonymous is it gives your life a greater purpose than yourself, like it says in the 12 of 12. Not something I made up. And I have that. You know, my purpose is to carry the message. You know, that's why, and I call it bragging. I'm so tickled that there's a big guy at the men's meeting this morning, and I took him there last week, and I got a phone call from a guy last night, and it was so funny. He says, I'm a little concerned. This guy weighs 600 pounds. Is he going to be able to put my seatbelt on? And how do I ask him to put the seatbelt on in my car? And I said, don't worry about it. Just take him to the damn meeting. You know. And he said, yeah, that's right. And he's a great guy. You know, we have some wonderful people in San Diego that carry the message. And I'm proud to be a member of that fellowship. And those people that continue to carry the message, you know, there's... We welcome you to come down and visit us and call us, and we'll tell you where our meeting is, and it's a beautiful thing. This fellowship saved my life, and I believe that my abstinence is a gift from God that I have today. There's no doubt in my mind, and it's by grace, like it says in the book. And I had to look up the definition, and it means to me that it's a free, unmerited, unwarranted gift. You know, I'll just end. But there's a guy that moved away from us, and he called me up one day. He says, you know, I saw the most interesting thing on the church, on the side of one of those church bulletin boards. It says salvation is received, not achieved. And he says, you know, I just put the word abstinence in there. He says it fits. You know, abstinence is received, not achieved. So that's been my challenge in the last few years, from going to those step studies and talking to my sponsor, is to receive. My only job is to receive that grace and let it flow through me and bless whoever I can with it, you know. And I'm so glad you're all here, and I just think that there's somebody here that I know everybody's probably recognized him, but I just think John and his crew's done a marvelous job on this thing. Thank you, John. And I'm not narcissistic enough to believe that if people want to talk to me after it's over, but all the guys voted we're going to leave, so I won't be here. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Dave. Thank you so much. Our second speaker is Ella.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ella. I'm a compulsive overeater from Oakland, California. And I just want you to know that I'm the last-minute pinch hitter. I was checking into my room, and someone heard my name, and it was Karen, and she said, are you Ella? Are you a long-timer? And I said, well, I guess so. And she said, someone broke their knee. Can you speak tomorrow morning? And I said, well, I mean, Sunday morning. I said, well, okay. And she said, do you want to know the topic? And I said, no, just stick a piece of paper under the door, you know. And then it was like a power greater than ourselves. And I said, oh. not me for this topic. Oh, this is terrible. But then, you know, in June of this year, it'll be 28 years. And when I came in, a lot of people helped me, and the unlikeliest people helped me. And so something I say may help somebody, and that's okay. And if it doesn't, you know you can go to a lot of meetings and hear a lot of things. And I just wanted to read something first. It struck me. It's from We Agnostics in the big book, well, the little book. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. This is the spiritual experience is the only thing that will conquer our illness, especially if he is a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. In other words, all of us, or all of me. to be doomed to a compulsive overeating death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Yeah, I would rather be doomed to a compulsive overeating death than believe in a power greater than myself. You know, when I came in, they said, take what you need and leave the rest. And that first step made a lot of sense to me. I was 40 years old when I came in. I'd been doing world-class gutter eating and every kind of diet since I was 12 years old. And then when I stopped eating, you know, I moved to California from New York. So, you know, when I grew up, you got diet pills and you got, you got shots. I went to those people who shot you full of the pregnant somebody's urine. And, I mean, we had to wear gloves when we cooked so we wouldn't get fat on ourselves. And, I did all those things quite willingly. And, I came in here and they said, you're powerless over food. Well, that I could understand. I really could understand. And I'd like to say, you know, I got the first step. And I got it in my mind and I thought, well, of course I'm done. Of course I've hit bottom. Nobody has suffered more than me. And, you know, what I've come to believe is that suffering and a desire to stop are still not enough. And I don't know what is enough, but I did not get continuous abstinence until January of 1996. Now that looks like a long time now, it's 14 years, but that means there were 13 and a half years of continuous relapse. And sometimes I had 3.5 years of abstinence, and I thought, oh, God, I'll never go back out. And then, you know, there'd be a Super Bowl party, and I'd go look at the buffet as though I wasn't a compulsive overeater, and I'd see my hand reach for whatever, and I'd be off and running again. And the one thing I can tell you is that I never left the program, and I never left the meetings. And I worked all the tools, and I called my sponsor every day at 7:45 a.m. before there were cell phones. And I said, this is what I'm going to eat today. And the next morning I called her and said, Marguerite, I binged again. And she said, that's okay, honey. You know, you're being honest. And you're doing the best you can. So I really... I just don't even know what that is. I mean, I was brought up in a very religious household, and I was brought up with the idea that if you prayed, everything would be okay. And when I was about 12 years old, something really, really terrible happened, and I prayed, and it didn't change. And, you know, I'm really struck by this. Our chief want in life is somebody who shall make us do what we can. And when I came in here, I thought, well, maybe God was a fairy godmother, you know, and I just sit and I pray and you know, one day the wand will wave over me and I'll be abstinent. And I really got angry when I found out that was not the case. And I need a power greater than myself. I mean, left to my own devices, I think the only things I can do are change my cat's litter and feed them. And that's non-negotiable. But everything else is up for grabs. And so in order to get out of bed, you know, I have to ask, please get my feet on the ground. Sometimes I have to call another compulsive overeater and I have to say, stay on the phone with me. I'm putting my feet on the floor. I'm standing up. And, you know, I can't afford to get angry over that, you know, temperament of mine that makes me resist so much doing that which makes me happy. And I just have to keep on asking. And, you know, I don't know what I'm praying to, but I believe that prayer works. And over the years, people have helped me a lot, and they've told me different things. And one said that there is a source of goodness and strength in the universe that's mine if I ask for it. So each day I ask for what I need, and I don't know who I'm asking or why I'm asking. And, you know, a lot of times I just ask, you know, instead of resistance, give me enthusiasm. Instead of a negative attitude, give me appreciation. And, you know, very specifically, guide me and help me. And the biggest thing that proves to me that there is a power greater than myself is that one day at a time, I don't have to overeat. And, you know, we're laughing, you know, sometimes about our relationship to food. And I was in the airport, and there was a little white thing, and I'm sitting next to somebody who has 24 years, this little white thing on the ground, and I said, you think that's a yogurt-covered raisin? She said, well, maybe it's a yogurt-covered peanut. And I said, I think we better check and make sure. You know, at 40 paces, I can spot an M&M, you know. And there are people who drop an M&M on the BART stairs, you know, or something like that. They're really sick. The other thing, somebody I went on an OA retreat once, and we were supposed to have a dialogue with God, and I'll just wrap up. And I'd had an ear infection for about 3 weeks, and I, you know, spoke to God, and I said, what about my ear? And the voice came back and said, Ella, if I could fix your ear, don't you think there's a lot of things I'd be fixing? And I had to understand then, for me, that my higher power was like a parent, and that suffered and wanted the best for me, but that could not make it all okay. And I was very struck yesterday in a panel when someone talked about all the footwork she'd done, and the outcome, you know, was not the outcome she wanted. And I cannot place my belief and my faith on having things in this universe turn out okay. You know, I can only base it on, I need something other than my mind and my emotions and my attitude. Because if I rely on them, you know, like many people, I probably don't have the courage to kill myself, but I certainly have the capacity to, you know, dive into a vat of whatever and go out in a very slow and painful way. So to me, you know, the power for anybody here who has trouble with the G word or the HP word or the whoever word, you know, there is this program, there is this steps. Sometimes it's the power that, you know, put Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob together, and that's a legacy that's been given to me and to all of us. And for that, I thank you.
Thank you so much. Could we make sure we keep the Ask Us Baskets going, please? And our third speaker is Jackie.
My name is Jackie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jackie.
Years ago, there was a woman in this program I used to give, and she'd say, my name is, and I am not a gambler. And, you know, I could do that. I really could do that. When they asked me to speak, and she promised me that it would be about God, because that was my favorite subject, I said, oh, yeah, sure. Okay. So I was given some really beautiful guidelines when I came into this program, and I'd like to share some of those with you. I came in when I was 47 years old. I had just come off a really dramatic diet. I had gotten down to a size 7, and with my hip structure, that's impossible. People were stopping me on the street and telling me I looked like a cadaver and I should please stop doing what I was doing. And I went and got a physical checkup and my doctor got hysterical because my cholesterol was 325. So I think I started gaining weight before I even left his office. Because it was coming back on so fast and so hard and I was so out of control that I didn't know what to do. I knew there wasn't another diet. I had tried. I knew that, and I was so ticked off at God, which I had been for a number of years. I believed in the God that my mother kind of, you know, the guy in the sky in the long white robe with the great big beard and the checklist marking off everything I had ever done wrong so I could fall down and skin my knee or whatever. And it had carried to the extreme that when I walked into these rooms, I believed in a higher power that had murdered my infant son to punish me. That was the God I had when I came into these rooms. So, wasn't nice. Anyway, through that diet and feeling the way I felt after that diet, which was suicidal, and I have 5 children, guys. Suicide's a no-no. I went to a therapist who steered me to OA. Now, I had been in the rooms 3 years before. I had been taken to a meeting, and God bless her, I hope she is still in this program, and I hope she looks as gorgeous as she did that first day when I saw her. But there was a woman in the front of the room sharing about how Jesus had saved her. I'm a Jewish girl from Brooklyn. You know? So I decided that I couldn't do this, and I went away for 3 years and a lot of pounds. When I came back, God, with his really amazing sense of humor, took me to a meeting that there was a young girl at the front of the room, and she was holding a chain with a rock crystal. Remember when everybody was wearing quartz? She was wearing this rock crystal, and she was talking about her higher power. So I figured if there was enough room here to go from a born-again, devout Christian to a teeny bopper in a ponytail who had a rock crystal for a higher power, there was room for me. But I still had that belief, that really awful belief. And briefly, when I came back into the rooms, I had just broken 200 pounds again, and I was climbing like crazy. I couldn't stop. And so I stood in front of a mirror one morning, looking in the mirror, calling myself names that I would not say in a public place under any circumstances, because I was crying and eating, because I was eating those terrible cookies, shoving them in my face and looking at my body and seeing what was happening to it again and wanting to die. So when I came in, I had this terrible, terrible God, and this was talking about it, and this woman came up to me and she suggested that I write a want ad. And the want ad be what I would like in a higher power. But then she qualified, not God the cosmic bellhop, not Santa Claus, you know, not bring me roller skates, bring me a bike, bring me a husband, bring me the smartest kid, bring me, but what do you really need in a spiritual being? So I sat down and I wrote, and I finally came up with, I wanted somebody to give me the strength to deal with whatever came down the pike, you know, that's what I needed. And so I gave her this, and then she said, okay, good. That's that part of the want ad. What about the other part? What are you willing to bring to the equation? That took longer. I finally came back with a broken, damaged human who would attempt to work the steps and do what I was told to the absolute best of my ability, knowing that each day's ability was different. And that's what I have attempted to do. Now, I need to tell you that that has changed to the point that I don't have that guy in the sky anymore. I have a best friend. I have a friend who is there for me, who guides me, who will listen when I whine and gripe and complain. I have 5 kids. By God's grace, I have 13 grandkids, a great grandkid. There's always stuff, you know? There's just always stuff. And it's up to me where I want to focus. And I have a higher power who's given me the strength to look for the joy rather than live in the problem. You know, if a kid is sick, yeah, okay, kid is sick, and he's getting treatment, but there's 4 other kids and 13 grandkids and da-da-da-da and all my friends from the program and a job that I love and all of this stuff is still there. Where do I want to sit down and focus? So I have worked very hard on developing a relationship with a higher power who loves me as I stand, who accepts me as I stand, who will back me up. No, he did not part the Red Sea for me when my husband was diagnosed with a terminal illness. That wasn't his job. His job was to give me the strength to be the best caretaker, the best helper, and the most loving woman I could be, so that when it was over, I didn't look at the mirror and call me names. I have in this program, slowly, over 21 years, one day at a time, become a woman I can respect by copying the actions of women in these rooms that I do respect. I have become a person of honor, and I was a liar. I have become a person, well, when I came here, what I wanted God to give me 5 inches between my hip and my ankle, because I'm too short, and at 5'9", a size 3 body. I know that what I get to be is as healthy as I can possibly be. And according to my doctors, I am as healthy as any 69-year-old lady can be. And I am astoundingly grateful to this program for that. Because without this program, in 1997, when I had my triple bypass, I would have died. I didn't. Because you guys taught me how to live, you taught me how to eat, you taught me how to face life. And for that, I wound up with a higher power who loves me. As Chris from San Diego always says, I am God's baby girl and he loves me. And I am so grateful for that sentence. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you. And now we have our 4th speaker, Terrell. Could we pass the after baskets round one more time and then pass it up toward the front, please, because we're going to start answering questions as soon as possible.
Hi, I'm Terrell. I'm a compulsive overeater. let's see. Qualify, so some people don't know me. My top weight is somewhere around 325 pounds, and I have 31 years of abstinence. So, and those of you that don't know about me, if you don't think I'm a compulsive eater, I was told by a doctor that if I did not stop eating sugar 32 years ago, that if I didn't stop eating sugar, I'd be blind within a year. And then I proceeded to put on 30 pounds in 6 weeks. So I have the disease of compulsive overeating. I'm dyed-in-the-wool compulsive eater, and I have found my solution in the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. When I got asked to lead this or be in this panel, I had the same exact reaction. Not God. Please, anything but God. You know? Now, I've had a tremendous journey with God in the 31 years I've been in here. When I came in, where my religion of birth or my religion of childhood is Southern Baptist. And I'm a sinner in their eyes because I dance. So, and that was the reason I was raised with. But I've had to go through this whole progression, and I also learned that in the beginning, when I first came to Overeaters Anonymous, when I was 17, I knew I could not do this program because I was a sinner. And I knew that I could not share my deep, dark secrets with anyone, and I knew that I could not work this program. But I did take the food plan, and I lost weight. And I'm very clear that a food plan is not the answer. The food plan is not, this program does not say we have a food plan for you that's perfect, and then once you come in, you'll lose your weight, and then everything's going to be hunky-dory. What we do is we give you a program to take away that hole in your soul so that we can not seek excess food to try and find that one thing that's going to fix me one more time. And that's the reason why this program works, is because it's not about a food plan. Now, food plan is very important. Abstinence is extremely important. Obviously, if I thought I could get what I got today with binging and then abstaining for a while and then binging again, I would not do that. I would not be here today. Because there's nothing like day in, back-to-back abstinence. The clarity, the absolute clarity that comes in from being that I abstained yesterday, I abstained the day before, I abstained the year before, I abstained the decade before, and the decade before that, and the decade before that. So there's a clarity that comes with it. When I first came, the second time I came in, because I am a retread, I came when I was 17, and I had to go back out and do some more eating. It's really a shame when you hit the last house on the block when you're 17 years old, but I did. I hit the last house on the block, and I had to go out for 4 more years, see if there was another door I could knock on to find the answer. And I wound up back here. When I came back the second time around, one thing that started leading me down a spiritual path was that I found that if I talked about God in my pitch, you applauded. And I liked that. And I wanted to be king of OA. Or as my sister simply put, king of the fatties. That, and what, $2 to get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks. But the bottom line is that I started then talking about God. But I didn't believe in God. See, I believed that God was just punishing God. That I was, there's no way in hell that God was going to take care of me. First off, who would want to take care of me? And if I turned my life over the care of that asshole, then I was going to just be destined for trouble. That I literally would have to stop dancing. And I would have to go straight. And I'd have to do all the stuff that was demanded upon me by my God. So I didn't want to turn my will and life over to that, because whenever I did, it seems like it just turned to hell anyway. And I used to pray that my parents would stop drinking and fighting and I would wake up thin, and it didn't happen. But it started by me started talking about God to please you, led me on a spiritual path. Now, in that spiritual path, I've gone to a Hindu guru. I've studied outside spiritual materials, which is, read books, meditations, done a lot. And here I'm at 31 years old, and I'm probably more of an atheist than I've ever been in my life. When I say an atheist, though, what I'm saying is probably, I may be more Buddhist. And so when I was told that I was going to be talking about God, I thought, no, they must know the old Terrell. The Terrell that was a spiritual speaker on Sunday. The Terrell that would just love God and talk about God all day long. And that wanted to be known on his tombstone as the man who loved God. An evolution happened for me. And I don't know what your evolution is. And I don't demand that you believe the way I do, just like you don't demand to believe that I don't believe the way you do, and you don't believe the way I do. The bottom line is, I know that what I read in this today is it says that we have a program, it's 12 steps. And what the 12 steps have told me is that I have to change my attitude. That I don't live my life based upon fear. Now, they said the flip side of fear is faith. Well, I have faith that life will get better. I have a belief because I see what happens in these rooms when people stop living in fear. And when people stop living being self-centered. So when I stop being self-centered, living in fear, living in my life based upon the human ego, and the minutia and the tininess that human ego makes me believe that I am, then my life blossoms. Now, I also know that there is no slot machine. that I don't get to put good deeds in, and then I crank the handle, and then I get a payoff. There is no jackpot. You know, I said this from Serenity Sunday once, and I so strongly believe this, that a lot of women got up and said, oh my God, I love this program. It gave me the gift of the program as I got married. I'm a single gay man. I will never get that gift. I don't know, never, but I can't get that gift today. So the way I look at it is, there is nowhere in my big book does it say that their gift of the program is marriage or healthy children or anything. There is not one material thing that is promised to us in the big book except sobriety or abstinence, which to me is a material thing. What I read and what I see is there's a change that happens in me that I believe life is good. That what I read in the big book is that I will have this moral psychic change where I look at life differently. That I don't live in fear of you. That I have a sense of serenity and sanity within. That I find joy, happiness, and freedom. And peace of mind. And that's enough. Because everything else, no matter what's happening, when you have that, that's enough. You know, I say that kind of someone's spirituality or working their 12-step program is not what happens to them. It's how they respond to what happens to them. And that's what this program has enabled me to have. A sense of, I call it a higher power. That's the reason why I say I might be more of a Buddhist. I believe there's a higher consciousness that I can turn to. That I can get out of that sniveling little self that says, oh my God, what do you think of me? What about this? And what about that? And oh my God, I'm in fear right now. That there is, I can go to this higher sense of self that when I meditate, I go that higher sense of self. That higher consciousness in my brain that literally enables me to go forward. Now, I came from the belief that there was me some white knight coming to rescue me. I really believe there's me a white knight to rescue me. That somehow, because if you lived in my childhood, you wanted being rescued. Rescue was what was something that you desired so dearly. So I found that as I got abstinent and I was in this program for a while, that I was still waiting for that white knight to come rescue me. There is no white knight. Then I became a victim. Because, see, woe is me. If you had my mother, you'd drink too. I mean, you'd eat too. If you had my family, you had no choice. But you folks tell me I don't get to play victim. That I have a way out. That all those character defects that I have, there is a way past them. And it's not through food. Because a binge delays the growth. And you told me that I can walk through the fire tonight or I can walk through the fire in the morning. And I've learned that I have to walk through the fire now. Because what happens on the other side is amazing, tremendous. And being at this birthday party this weekend and seeing these long-term panels where I see people up here for, you know, where sometimes everyone has more time than I do on the panel. It's an amazing thing to see. So if there's one thing that I've known is that when I turn my will and my life away from fear, amazing things happen internally. Not externally. But it's amazing if I'm living in fear, the fear that I attract. When I live in anger, it's amazing the resentment I attract. And for that, I'm grateful that you've given me peace of mind. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Carol. We have one more after basket floating around out there. If someone could walk it over here to the corner, I would love to get it. And in the meantime, we have other questions. We have a series of questions about what you do on a daily basis to maintain your spiritual condition. How do you interact with your higher power? And I'd like each of you to respond to that, how you do things on a daily basis.
Obviously, it's changed over the last 31 years. It used to be that I would wake up and I'd read 5 to 10 minutes of reading, and then I'd meditate for 30 minutes. Now what I do is I go to the gym and get on the cardio machine, and I don't put the earbuds on. I can read the TV. I can read the closed caption, or I can read my magazine. But if I put the earbuds in, it's too much, and I need to decompress in the morning. For some reason, I need decompress. So how do I maintain my spiritual condition as I decompress? Oh, I listen to my sniveling babies all the time. Nothing like a baby to make you spiritual. And I basically, when I start getting fear, I go, you don't live your life based upon fear, Taro. Damn the ego, full speed ahead. So that's the way I stay in my fit spiritual condition. Oh, and if you're new, do a lot of reading the big book. When I say new, I mean 10 years or less of abstinence. You read that big book, because it was what I do today, you cannot do at 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. You cannot. I could not. I could not be where I am today if I did not do all that work beforehand. So when I talk about my spiritual condition, if you've got 30 days of abstinence, don't get on the ethical machine and pick out the earbuds. Start reading that big book, because you need to study it like nobody's business, and you understand when what we talk about here. And I know I just lectured, but I'm an opinionated old-timer. And that was my basis. I have years and years and years of foundation. Develop that foundation. So.
It does change. It does change. And in the beginning, I had a suggested list from my sponsor, and I did exactly what was on that list. And I read for today, the day for today. If you don't have it, it's our little OA book of daily. The word went out of my head, but it's a daily meditate. There you go. Thank you. I'm not real good at sitting quiet and meditating, but I am very good at keeping up a running conversation with God. And that's, as I said, I have tried to turn God into a friend. So I wake up in the morning and I look around my home and I say thank you for all the things that in my life are good. And I've got a nice long list, which is happy, and I ask God's help in the things that aren't. And then I go into my day, and if it's a tough day, I was taught as a newcomer. Well, with a newcomer, it was every day. But if something's going on, it's when I open the car door, I say, after you. And when I open the door to the building I work in, I think, because there's usually other people, I think, after you. There is always a place in my office that is God's corner, and either it had a pretty picture or whatever. And the place where I work now, it is God's house, so I don't have to worry about creating God's space. And I just keep a running commentary. It's because on my own, without some kind of soothing influence, I will gossip, I will be unkind, and I will judge. I mean, that's how I was for 47 years, and that little voice is still back there somewhere. And I don't get to live my life that way, so I need that soothing influence. So reading the big book is an absolute requirement. Reading the steps one at a time, whichever one you're on, and remembering you don't have to do this alone. That big empty space I have inside me that I tried to fill with donuts, large steaks, and large quantities of cheese gets filled when I use that soothing influence in my life.
I thought I could get out of this one. I've come to believe that for me, that a higher power is in the present moment, and that one of the ways I can practice connection with a higher power is to try and appreciate something in the present, because I, you know, have a prescription for shit-colored glasses. Oops, that's being... maybe they're not taping this part. But anyway, I do have that prescription for them. Maybe they're contact lenses by now. And, you know, fortunately, I have a sponsor who just, you know, look for what you like. Practice appreciation. Change the channel. Don't even have a discussion with that other stuff. Don't even ask for it to be removed. Just take your attention elsewhere. So, and I usually try to talk to someone in OA pretty early on in the day, and I ask for help with what I need to do. And mainly, I just continue to ask for help to do that which will bring me and others happiness, and to have the willingness not to do those things which bring me and others unhappiness. And I don't know, it's pretty simple, but I have to ask a lot. And sometimes, you know, that contact comes, I really do hear that voice. And sometimes the voice just says, go home. Do not stop at Whole Foods and decide that you are going to buy an abstinent lunch to go. Go home and cook the vegetables in your refrigerator. And to me, those are spiritual decisions every single day, because they're decisions. I did have this sponsor once who would say, hey, God wants you to be happy. And so it's trying to just ask for the ability to do those things which I know after I do them make me feel better. And unfortunately, my tendency is not to want to do those things. So.
One thing I wanted to add to this is that basically the way when I was sitting and thinking, you know, since now I wasn't first, is I breathe. When things get really crazy and hectic and I'm like in traffic and, you know, I feel my shoulders tense up, I found I take a couple of nice deep breaths. It just seems to relax. And I just kind of like, and then I'm not fighting the planet anymore. Because as long as I'm fighting the planet, I'm not being very spiritual, very holy, or I have that wholeness going on with my being. So breath is something that I use a lot to bring me back to being centered.
Now, we have a whole series of questions about people who have experienced severe tragedies in their lives, whether as a child or as an adult, and whether they had a higher power at the time or now they're angry, they have trust issues, and they're looking for some guidance on how to deal with that. Would someone like to speak to that?
Okay. Before program, it was very simple. God did it. I blamed him for every single thing that went wrong in my life, from my being fat, from being my mother being who my mother was, to losing a child. It was all his doing, let me tell you. And he did it because I was bad. So the payback on that one was that it all fell on me. I was crap, therefore God did all these things to me, and this was not a very good God. And I never got over it. I dealt with my son's death. It happened when I was 21 years old. I dealt with it when I was in these rooms after 2 years working on an inventory, was when I first finally dealt with those feelings. My father died 9 months later, and I dealt with those feelings in the room, because what I did out there was eat, drink, use anything. All of my using was legal by prescription, but it was still the same. In these rooms, and I worked through that. If you're full of anger, I worked with that through a lot of writing, a lot of inventory, a lot of talking to a sponsor, a lot of getting in touch with other people in these rooms who have gone through the same thing and who had the same kind of anger. And that's one of the amazing blessings of being here. There is always someone who's walked that path before you and will open their heart and help you walk through it. When I lost my husband, I met him in these rooms when I was 56 years old, and I lost him 5 years ago. So it wasn't a long time that I had him, but he was the gift of all gifts that God has ever given me in this program, and I am grateful, and I will never, ever do anything but be grateful. And there was a lot of writing, there was a lot of talking to the sponsor, and there was a lot of knowing that we are human, our bodies are, it's amazing we make it to 12. I mean, we split, our skin splits, we break, there's diseases, we keep rumbling on. And so I don't think it's God's job to make anybody healthy, and I don't think he strikes anyone with disease. But I do believe he will give me the strength to do the things I need to do. And that's what I asked for this last time, and it was a long process. It was a long process. It was 4 years. And just to give me the strength to see through, to be the best I can be, and to let him be who he needed to be. And I don't have a lot of anger. I have a little wistfulness because I would have loved to have had him longer. But there's a tremendous difference. And if this is something you want to talk about, catch me and I'll give you a phone number and we can talk.
When I was 11, my dad kissed me goodbye in the morning and went on the top of our apartment building, 11 floors, and jumped off. And I had a big excuse for all my life about why the world owed me, why I was afraid of abandonment, why I couldn't trust, and all that stuff. And, I think there is still pain there, but I don't make that story the center of my life, and I only say that here. You know, I no longer introduce myself to you and say, hi, my dad committed suicide. And I just say that here because... yesterday I went to a panel that said pain hurts but recovery heals, and there isn't anybody in this universe who hasn't experienced pain. And that is my belief, that we're human and subject to pain. And people are always saying, God, people, 6 million died, and how could God do this? And I just have to say, if I believed God did that, I couldn't believe in God. So I just have to get out of that, whatever they call it, theological debate about the creation of evil and blah, blah, blah. I just have to feel that God, helps me, a higher power helps me deal with these things. And in program, I've faced a lot of difficult things. And, frankly, we're compulsive overeaters. My house burnt. I was violently raped. Those things don't make me eat. What makes me eat is there's a piece of cheese on that table. Oh, my God. I just can't believe that I'm singled out for anything bad. Somebody asked me when the house burnt down, she said, well, what do you think, why do you think this happened? What do you think the lesson was? And I said, well, I think the Oakland Fire Department didn't put out the fire in the hills correctly. A lot of houses burned. I just don't think it was a personal message to me. And I can use those experiences in many ways, but I, you know, what somebody said last night, she said, you know, she did not like to get up and say, oh, you know, give me pain, it's the touchstone of spiritual growth, you know. No, you know, I love it when people say it's an opportunity. Come on, it's a drag, you know. And but we have to deal with it. So I just try to sort of separate, I need a higher power, because otherwise I just have food. So, you know, why did I trust food? I mean, you know, it's not like, wow, you know, that Snickers bar really has done great things for me. and so, you know, I didn't have trouble with, you know, trusting a Snickers bar, but I seemed to have trouble with God, you know. So, anyway, thanks.
All right, we got to quickly round this up because, as usual, we're out of control here. Let's thank all of our speakers. Haven't they been wonderful? Thank you. If you wish to, please stand, and we're going to share the third step prayer. Okay. Quickly. The other group is champing at the book. Okay. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with thee and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve thee of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy will, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Keep coming back. It works. What a tease.
You were wonderful. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Oh, I had never heard you before, and I
know. I love that. It was so funny.
Thank you. Couldn't have done it without you.
God knew exactly what you were doing.
Okay.
God, thank you for your share.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was rocking.
Yeah.
What a
God.
That's it. From God.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But I thought it was so great when you said, oh, I did it so they'd like me.
Yeah. It was
everybody was great.
I think it was a job. Yeah.